Welcome to the Weekly Workplace Podcast, your hub for leveling up your workplace skills with a journey to success that's anything but boring. Get ready to ditch the dull and dive into the dynamic. Imagine high fives and fist bumps for triumphing over frontline challenges and confetti cannons for nailing your leadership goals. Our episodes feature interviews with industry game changers, spicy tips from trailblazing pros, and mind-blowing techniques to turn you into the office superhero you were meant to be. So, whether you're rocking the cubicle life or leading from the corner office, grab your cape and get ready to soar to new heights with the Weekly Workplace.
Welcome to the Weekly Workplace, where professionals come to find insights and inspiration for success. With you today, well, it's me again, but we have a very, very special guest on the show today. I'd like to welcome the Assistant Director of Office of Health Outreach, Policy, and Education, also known as HOPE, Joe Kingsbury. Thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Absolutely, Brianna. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it is my pleasure. Honestly, Joe and I go a little bit back, I guess almost 10 years back, it feels like now, with our participation in Molly's Miles. But what we're really going to hone into today, talking a lot about leading remote teams, which you did a lot of in your previous role. And so a perfect fit. But tell us a little bit about what you're doing now, Joe, and kind of where your career has progressed.
Sure. Well, buckle in. This is it's a fun and wild ride.
Yes, I'm in.
So my career has taken a lot of different turns over the length of my professional life thus far. And so my current role, as you said, Assistant Director of Health Outreach, Policy, and Education, or HOPE for short, which is a conglomerate office. It's comprised of five different departments at MU. Two departments are from Extension. One is called Community Health Engagement and Outreach, mm-hmm. or CHEO for short.
Okay.
The other is called Continuing Education for Health Professions, or CEHP for short.
Okay. I've seen the acronyms, but I never actually knew what they were. This big world of extension.
There they are. Yeah. Follow me with your decoder ring and we'll work our way through alphabet soup, shall
we? Sounds good.
There are two more from School of Medicine. One is called Missouri Telehealth Network, or MTN for short, which is also home to the Show Me Echo program. Mm. And then the other from School of Medicine is called the Rural Scholars Program. And then finally, department number five is from College of Health Sciences, and it's called the Center for Health Policy, or CHP.
Okay. So lots of great things going on under this particular umbrella.
Indeed. And so as assistant director, I essentially help to build processes and tools and networks and collaborative projects among and across each of those five departments and their leadership. And then I'm also focused on helping to build external networks and foster new and nurture existing collaborative relationships with partners that we have outside the university. And so it's a really exciting position because, as you can tell, I just hate talking to people. it's fun for me because I get to meet extremely talented and interesting and highly regarded professionals in their particular idioms and find out where their missions intersect with ours and make sense of a relationship there, which is precisely what I did in my previous role. So nice segue, right?
Great segue.
We'll dial back a little bit. I'm going to kind of Tarantino it a little bit. And so we'll start with the now, and then we'll dial all the way back to the beginning. So I'm a tiger through and through. I did my undergrad at Mizzou in business administration, and I also did my grad there, but we'll get there in a second. But after undergrad, I ended up getting my first big boy job with a company called Westfield. Hmm. It was a property management company. I'm from St. Louis myself, and so I started with them in St. Louis. They managed shopping malls, and they had the entire St. Louis portfolio of major shopping centers there. And so I started as management associate at Westfield Mid Rivers in St. Peter's, Missouri.
Okay.
And so I was there for about 8 months, and Westfield sold the St. Louis portfolio to another company. And instead of sending me along with those properties, they promoted me and moved me out to Palm Desert, California.
Whoa, I didn't realize that. That's incredible, Joe.
I was a SoCal boy just for a couple of years, and that was an exciting journey, and what an eye opener that was for this Midwest boy. And it was special because I met my now wife there, and it must have been love because she came back to Missouri with me.
She's pretty incredible.
So I was assistant general manager of Westfield Palm Desert for about a year and a half down there. And unfortunately, in the economic downturn of 2008, my job was eliminated. And so I decided, you know what? I'm heading back to Missouri. I want to pursue a grad degree. I'm not sure in what yet, but I also had this little voice in the back of my head growing up in St. Louis in a family of St. Louis law enforcement officers where I, you know, wanted to get out there and do the job. And so I decided to apply for the Police Academy, LETI, Law Enforcement Training Institute here at MU, got accepted. And shortly after my training there, got on with MU Police Department. And at MU Police Department, I served for just shy of 6 years, about three on patrol and then 3 full years in investigations as a detective. And my real bailiwick there, Brianna, was crisis intervention. That's where I really sunk my teeth in, was assisting folks who were experiencing mental and emotional crisis, as well as I became the crisis intervention team coordinator for the department. And I was the chair of the Mid-Missouri Crisis Intervention Team Council, and I served on the state board as well and helped to stand up the very first Missouri CIT conference. And that was a whole lot of fun. Wow. And through that, I built a lot of relationships with folks at Department of Mental Health, which is where my career took me after MUPD. And so I hung up my police hat and I moved to state government, and I became the Central Region Director of the Office of Licensure and Certification under the Division of Developmental Disabilities at the Department of Mental Health. Say that three times fast.
Yeah, can't even. No, can't do that.
And that really, Brianna, was the start of my real intensive experience managing remote teams, folks that were spread out all over the state and not all centralized in Jefferson City with me. And so we'll dive a little bit further into kind of what that ride looked like. But I traveled a lot. I got to meet people all over the state and see folks from all different walks of life in that world. And that was exciting. But the travel got a little heavy. And we started having children, my wife and I. And so I knew the travel had to die back a little bit. And that's when somehow, by the stars aligning, maybe Mars was in retrograde, who knows, but the position at Missouri Telehealth Network came open as Associate Director of Operations. That was my foot in the door at that particular organization. And I worked there for about 4.5 years, holding two different roles, first as Ops Director, and then later on as Partner Management Specialist, where I really, really, really worked exclusively in the Show Me Echo program, building teams of experts from around the state in various fields of healthcare, which led me into my current role. There's your full Tarantino spin.
I love it. My goodness. I didn't realize all of those experiences that you had, Joe. How incredible.
Yeah,
how
thank incredible. You. Yeah. I forgot to say, when I was at MUPD, that's when I put myself through grad school at Truman School of Public Affairs at MU as well. And so, again, tiger through and through.
I see it. And still here and still representing strong. So I, again, so grateful for just the nuggets of information you're going to be able to provide to our listeners today. I want to bring you back to that space you mentioned when you transitioned into that state role and started really managing some of those remote teams. Talk a little bit about that transition from leading in kind of the traditional office setting to now really leading those remote and distributed teams.
Absolutely. So we have to kind of explore this through a lens of retrospection, right? Not just me remembering my experience, but also reminding ourselves that this is pre-COVID. This is pre-Zoom taking over the world and us being really accustomed to having remote meetings and remote teams and remote management. It happened, but it was not as robust and not as sophisticated as it is today. So I worked at DMH from 2015 to 2019.
Okay.
And when I first started, the majority of my team was housed at Jefferson City. Within the first year, my team morphed. they didn't really grow or expand, but they sort of just metamorphosized into a remote team scattered across the state. So I had one person in Jefferson City with me. I had one in Marshall. I had one in Hannibal, and I had one down in Springfield. And all of us were responsible for a very heavy volume of work and a very regular and rotational schedule of work that required us to travel a lot and deal with a lot of paperwork and a lot of processes and deal with a lot of communications and politically sensitive things and a lot of responsibility and accountability put on this team of people that I was put to lead the charge of. And all the while trying to make sure that we're accomplishing our goals, I also wanted to make make sure that we felt like a cohesive unit, right, even though we were spread across the state. And I also wanted to make sure, because each of these folks were either housed at their home office or in a regional office that belonged to DMH in their particular catchment area, that communication was clear, that direction was clear and concise. And really, I kind of coined it as my four C's for managing remote teams. And that's communication, consistency, collaboration, and community. And really what I wanted to do was essentially be present in each of those spaces as the leader of this team, was to make sure that my communication was always clear and that it was always there. I don't want anyone feeling like they're falling off the radar, or sure, that they're not getting equal attention that they need from their supervisor that their colleague is getting just because of geographical proximity, right? I also wanted to make sure that I was consistent in my messaging and in my management style to everybody on the team, because they all deserve that. I had to think to myself, what is it that I would like to have in a remote position from my supervisor who's not located with me, who I'm not going to see face to face every day, in order to feel secure and ready to do my job that I'm responsible for doing? And so I wanted to be consistent in my leadership style with each of those members of the team. In terms of collaboration, I wanted to make sure that everybody felt involved, that everybody was invited to the table, that they knew that their opinion mattered and that their voice was going to be heard. And they were not just another cog in the machine, but they were a linchpin. Without them, this thing doesn't function. And so we wanted to make sure that no matter what, everybody felt empowered and valued. And then finally, community. I wanted to make sure that everybody did feel like they were part of a team, that it was an actual team. And so we did focus a lot on making sure that we were all in the same geographic space at certain intervals of time. We needed to come together and remind ourselves that it's okay to breathe the same air every so often and you know, remind each other what our shoes look like. And so it was an exciting opportunity every time we had the chance to come together and actually share that space together too.
What I really value that you are saying here, Joe, is just the intentionality. You need those kind of foundational understandings, those expectations. And I really value that you were able to establish that so early on. So what were some of the setbacks or some of the things that you encountered as you were trying to implement some of those four areas that you just identified?
Yeah, great question. We got to see the ugly side too, right? And so, or the making of the sausage, as it were. and understand this sort of kind of clarity and sight or real establishment of solid processes across managing teams didn't happen overnight.
Right.
There were stumbling blocks along the way. We had to try and fail in order to ultimately succeed, right? So one of the biggest hurdles that we had to overcome was simply just technology. Making sure that it was meeting our needs and serving us the way that we needed it to in that collaborative environment among remote teams. I'm not just speaking to, you know, video conferencing technology or picking up the phone and talking to somebody, even though that doesn't happen that much anymore, or sending an email, although all of those are essential tools, but also we had to think about the transfer of information, documentation, storage, confidentiality, making sure that everybody knew where to access things and how to access things and how to keep things up to date and how to make sure that everybody's getting the same information at the same time, and coming up with vehicles for delivery of that information and management of that information. So it was a challenge to kind of work through that. And it took feedback and insight from everybody on the team. And now I'm kind of speaking past DMH, but also kind of into the MTN world that I worked as well, because we had collaborative partnerships with folks all over the state with all different kinds of software mechanisms and packages and programs that they used in order to access the tools that they needed every day.
Right.
But then we also had to be able to manage the tools that we needed universal access for everybody to be able to use. And so really, Brianna, it came down to let's come up with an idea. Let's create it. Let's train on it. Let's implement it. And let's see if it works. Let's define a period of time that we're going to call a trial period on this new process, and not just a loosely formed process. Each time that we would launch something new, and that's both at MTN as well as DMH, it would be an arduous, in the weeds sort of development of a process. We'd map it out. We'd make sure people are trained on it. Everybody understands it. We could hold ourselves accountable to it. It's fully defensible. And then we would say, okay, go. It's time to do it. And so we do it. And if it fell apart someplace, hopefully we would have thought it through thoroughly enough in the development of that process to see where the wheels fell off and then go back and be able to triage those things and understand, was it a communication problem? Was it a diverging direction problem? Were you getting direction from your regional people differently than you were getting direction from your supervisory people? Are we understanding each other correctly? Do we all get what we're trying to do here? And that's the biggest thing. And I've heard you and Dewey and Ray at MTI speak to understanding the whys behind things, and really putting a lot of stock into making sure that everybody's on board with, why the heck are we doing this new thing? Why the heck are you moving my cheese? I need to be comfortable with this before I implement it or use it. I need to understand the purpose behind it. And so a lot of that learning process, Brianna, came back to understanding, how did we stand this thing up? How did we launch this thing? How did we try to build this network or this community within this team or within our partnership communities? Did we do it quickly? Did we think it through? Did we make sure that everybody understands what we're trying to do here? That's really the key.
And what I love is having such a thorough kind of plan in advance and really allowing that time in those development stages, you have ample opportunity to gain that insight and feedback from the people that are a part of it, right? And what we do know is that people are more committed to something that they help create. So allowing them, you said a collaboration earlier, allowing them that seat at the table to be able to say yay or nay and move along in that process with you. It didn't come as a surprise.
Precisely. And I mean, you know, we've all been there. We've all had the surprise, oh, we're doing this now.
Right.
And it's don't ask questions, just do it.
Right.
Just go. Right. And while sometimes that works for a minute, it never is sustainable.
Right.
Because then people start asking questions down the road and picking it apart and saying, well, how the heck did we get here in the first place? Mm-hmm. Nobody understands it. And that's when troubles are brewing. And so we really want to make sure that everybody is along for the entirety of the ride and understands exactly why we're building this process up.
Yes, yes. And you know, you think about those change processes and any time you have that, we often think about just the change itself, but we're not realizing just kind of the attitudinal processing that people have to go through. And even sometimes it's like a sense of grief. And I think we've talked about that before on other podcasts. Anytime you're going away with the old and in with the new and something different, there's a lot of feels that come with that. So really being able to dive into those and have the time that's necessary to process the change. Talk a little bit about some of the technologies, if you wouldn't mind, that you all were utilizing that was beneficial to the team, to that collaboration, to that sense of community, to the consistency. What were some tools that you found beneficial?
Sure, absolutely. So tools that are available to all of us really in the office space or the professional space, you know, we use the Microsoft Office suite, obviously, you know, that's pretty standard. And no, I'm not paid by Microsoft to say that. But you know, using spreadsheets and databases to help us maintain information, to help us maintain data and keep things current. That's a huge piece, Brianna, is keeping things current. Holy moly, is making the world is constantly changing around us, right? And we are in the people business. Yeah. And so that environment is constantly in flex. And it's a challenge to stay current and up to speed on where things are all the time, particularly when we're talking about partners or we're talking about clients or customers or students or whomever your target audience is or your target partnership population is. And so using spreadsheets and databases, using Outlook to its fullest potential and making sure that our emails are not just stacks of unread files, but instead we're training people how to organize themselves and be able to retrieve things quickly and be able to make sure that they're always as current as they can be in a conversation that they're a part of and that they're not, there's no messaging getting lost in the wash, making sure that people know how to use the different little tools and widgets and things that are available to them to keep themselves organized and stay on task and make sure that they don't forget something. I need that more than anything is to make sure that I don't forget something. And I know you guys can't see me, but I'm poking my head right now because my memory doesn't always serve me as well as it used to. And so I do rely on my calendar, on my task list. list on those sorts of things. And then this Teams environment is brand new. Well, I guess it's a few years old for the university, but it's still relatively new. And I think a lot of us are still adopting it and adapting to it and really building our processes around trying to include this technology in many of our processes in order to serve us well and not be scared of it and shoo it away and say, I don't want to adopt this. It's new and weird and crazy and I don't understand it and I don't have the time. Instead, we have to build that time out and make sure that we understand the tools that are available to us mm-hmm. so we can think of it like a craftsman. If you're a carpenter and you have this array of tools in front of you and you're like, I don't know what any of these are. I don't want to use them. They're scary. Then yeah. you're not going to get the job done as well as you could if you learned how to use these tools. And so it's very much like that. Just it's not tools that you can put your hands on. Also, video conferencing. There's so many platforms out there now. Obviously, Zoom has kind of taken over the world with the pandemic period as well as post-pandemic period. But, you know, using Teams, using WebEx, using all of these various platforms that offer the video conferencing when you're not in the same space, but you can still see somebody's face because nonverbals speak volumes, as we know. Absolutely. And that's lost in tonality in email and written communication. Some people are just short communicators in written form when in fact you can read a lot on their face or in their eyes or the way that they react to something or the way that they say the same word that they could write and you hear it differently. And so it's important to be able to have these tools available as well as making sure that you do have an opportunity every once in a while to, you know, again, like I said earlier, breathe the same air. And then also another interesting tool that we've been using a lot, particularly at MTN when I was there, is the doodle polls.
Using
that to help schedule. My gosh, everybody's schedules are so crazy. And so, you know, if you told me, hey, pop open all these people's calendars and see if you can find an open slot. Ha! Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Instead, how about I just send you a bunch of slots that might be available and everybody, I'm going to go with majority rules. And so that's a useful tool too. So we've been really trying to utilize those resources and helping to organize ourselves and then develop actual procedural tools to be able to use from our collaborative processes.
And you know what I'm thinking about as you're saying all of this, just the appreciation for sometimes just slowing down to be able to speed up. So you've talked a lot about the processes and creating the processes and the training portion of it and really getting people acclimated and emotionally processed, you know, through some of these adoptions of technology and remote teams in general. And that really does require time. So I really value that opportunity to slow down just to speed up again, right, as a community. How has that been beneficial for your teams? I guess speaking specifically for the most recent team you were on at MTN, where you've really laid out the processes, you've done the training. What benefits come with all of that?
Absolutely. I appreciate that question, particularly in the MTN space, because MTN is by far the largest organization that belongs to Hope. Mm-hmm. And it is also one of the most complex organizations that belongs to Hope. There's so much going on there. And I know that you understand that because you've done some work with MTN. And so you understand that there's a lot of stuff happening under that roof. And there's a whole bunch of different teams, all of which hold a different charge and a different responsibility and have different personalities that belong to them. And what we really, really tried to focus on, particularly as of late, upon my departure, we were developing a new customer relations management software solution to help manage all things MTN. And customer relations software, I'm not sure if you're terribly familiar, but it is a multifaceted world, and it's about as customizable as it can get,
right?
Which sounds great, right? Until you really start to dig in, you're like, holy cow. Like, if you ever tried to build a house, it's the same kind of thing. It's like, I have to pick out the color of the cabinet knobs.
Right.
I have to tell you where the switches are going to go on the wall. You know, it's those things you don't have an appreciation for until you're trying to do it. And that really, over my 4.5 years at that organization and the two different roles that I was in, that really sort of triumphed in the world of it took a village. And we all had to come together. We all had to speak our own particular languages that were specific to our areas of expertise within our teams, within our specific focus areas as professionals in that organization. But then we also all had to speak a common language and understand these processes together, you know, dig down into the weeds, but then step out and look at the bigger picture and make sure that things aren't happening in the minutiae that don't still fit into the bigger picture. We had to understand that. Right. How do we get from here to here without losing what's happening here? And so it was very much that. Luckily at MTN, the leadership is fantastic and everybody leaned so far into their teams of dedicated professionals to their work to get that real boots on the ground perspective to understand how to then plug it into higher level processes and things that are going to speak to partnerships and organizations outside of our own was essential. And it really did boost morale. And while it caused some headaches, I'm sure, along the way, it was incredible how much support everybody felt and how heard everybody felt in that process. And I've got to say, I'm going to give a shout out here to a particular person there named Christy Bauer, who took on the full-time position of standing up the CRM network for MTN. And my gosh, was it a full-time position? And is it a full-time position? She did a great job of making sure that everybody's perspectives were drawn upon.
Yes. Yeah. Those CRMs are beasts. And so, yes, shout out to her because that, you're right, is beyond a full-time job. I can't believe this, Joe. I just feel like I could sit and listen to these nuggets all day, but we are closing in on time. Actually, I think we're about at time. So we're going to run this a little bit longer because I have one more pending question I really want to ask you as we're thinking about the future of remote teams. So this whole series that we've kind of been in, the Leadership Horizon series, we've been talking a lot about just kind of that future of work. And so as you're thinking through just with your experience and with your knowledge on some of the future outlooks of things, how do you envision this future of remote work, distributed teams really evolving?
Sure. That's a question. I'll try to be brief for the sake of time, but I don't want to shortchange this response because I think it's important. So we have to acknowledge, you and I and everyone else have to acknowledge that there's still some distrust in the remote working world and just its existence and its vitality, its sustainability. Many big organizations, private organizations, and corporations have gone back to you're back in office, no more hybrid models, none of that stuff. COVID's here to stay, so we're going to have to get used to it and you know, you're back in office kind of thing. And that has actually proven not to be always beneficial, especially now that we've all lived through this period of transition in what is now what we consider normal in the working environment, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have to understand that not everybody sees working remotely differently. And that includes folks who could be working remotely or folks who could be running organizations that could offer that kind of environment for its employees. And so what we really need to do is listen to each other. We need to understand where the distrust is or the misunderstanding or the possible anxiety around that particular modality lies. Mm-hmm. And then we have to make sure that everybody's informed. We have to make sure that everybody understands where it's successful and why it's successful and how do we get there. How do we ensure that we have the infrastructure available to us to make this model sustainable and make sure that value is there for our employees, that they feel like this is a value add and not something that we're taking away from them, moving them out of an office or saying, hey, you can work in office, but only a couple days a week, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Make sure that feels like it's something special that's offered. It's a privilege and we treat it as such. I see a lot of possibilities for rapid growth of small startup companies with, you know, the ability of meeting offsite and remotely. My sister works for a big pharma company doing research, and she's one of two people in the entire US that belongs to this company. Everybody else is over in the European countries somewhere. Wow. And so she doesn't have the luxury of being able to go into an office. She works from home, but her company is thriving because everybody is so plugged into each other with the projects that they work on, even overseas across continental bounds. And so it's exciting to see the opportunity that lies out there for this global collaboration at scale, for organizations to be able to function within that environment. And I think as long as we can continue to focus on the benefits and try to maximize those benefits in a remote environment, to all the folks that really could help to lead the charge and carry the torch forward, we're going to continue to see that growth. Now, I do see the essence of relationships changing a little bit too. There's something special about being in the same space as somebody. Different things happen. You know, there's ideas come differently. Conversations go differently. The feel of being in the room with someone is different than being on a Zoom call with somebody. And so there will still be some adaptation that needs to occur in order for that same sort of organic process to happen. Now, maybe for an extrovert like you and me, we can sit here and talk all day, like right. We're in the same room and solve all the world's problems, but that doesn't work for everybody. And so making sure that we are flexible and agile enough to be able to meet everybody where they are using this technology and still being able to get work done and feeling like they're not on an island, making sure that folks feel like they're still integrated and empowered and informed and part of a team.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. What just a great way to end there. And I'm sitting here and I find myself just kind of reflecting back to the pandemic when we were fully remote. And I was so nervous heading into that because I thought to myself, how in the world is this going to happen? Because you're right. As an extrovert and a people person, I was very nervous about some of those relationships, you know, and I think it was Simon Sinek who had said during that transition that relationships will change. They will either get worse or they will get better. But relationships will change. And I'm so grateful that our team was very intentional during that time to ensure that actually our relationships flourished. And so kind of using a similar methodology as what you've described here on just the transition to a remote team, understanding that there's got to be intentionality in that relationship component as well, especially as we're moving into this future of work and not just the remote and distributed teams, but now you add in AI as well. Mm-hmm. And so how that's going to magnify the issues with relationships.
You're going to need a whole other podcast for AI.
We are. And we are actually doing that. So yes, we are doing that. I'm actually going to have a guest. So thank you for that segue there, Joe, without you even knowing it. I want to first tell you, though, thank you so very much for your time, your commitment, what you have done in leading the way for remote teams. You are truly an incredible leader and an asset here at the University of Missouri. So thank you.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure being your guest today. Thank you.
Yes. And we will be chatting again soon. I will be touching base. I'm sure there are plenty of other topics Joe and I can chat about in all of his experiences. But coming up next week, I want to just prep you. And again, great segue there from Joe. We're talking about artificial intelligence and kind of where it's going to play in this future of work. I will have on the show with me Scott Christensen, who is an associate professor here at the University of Missouri and really works in the entrepreneurial areas. And he is also one of our expertise in artificial intelligence. So I'm excited to bring him in and have a robust conversation again on the future of work. But thank you again, Joe Kingsbury. And as usual, if you have any questions or comments, anything that you didn't hear on the show that you want me to get to Joe, I'd be happy to do that. Go ahead and email us at mti@missouri.edu. And until next time, go be great.
And that's a wrap, folks. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of The Weekly Workplace. We hope you've been inspired, equipped, and ready to tackle whatever challenges come your way. But before you go, remember, the journey to success never stops. Keep grinding, keep growing, and keep striving for greatness. And hey, if you want to stay ahead of the game and never miss an episode, make sure you hit that subscribe button and turn on notifications. Don't forget to leave a comment and let us know what you thought of today's show. Your feedback fuels our fire. Also, show us some love by liking and sharing this podcast with your friends, colleagues, and fellow go-getters. Together, let's spread the knowledge and empower more professionals to reach their full potential. For even more tools and resources to elevate your career, check out the Missouri Training Institute. So until next time, keep hustling, keep learning, and keep dominating the workplace.